You're listening to Blast Processing, the official podcast of all things video gaming, gadget, and gear related on DVDverdict.com. On this week's episode, Kev digs too greedily and too deep, John takes a run, and Steve finds that saving the galaxy ain't so easy after all. Episode 18, Creeper! Hello, you are listening to Blast Processing, the official podcast of all things video gaming, gadget, and gear related that you just heard in the previously recorded introduction that plays during our cool theme music. I am, of course, your host, Steve. With me are my usual hangabouts and hooligans, Mr. Kevin Woolridge.
Our podcast is gamey.
And Mr. John Mercer.
I'm Batman.
No, you're not. You're John Mercer.
I know. It's just my voice sounds like Batman tonight.
Special guest host, Batman.
I need to take a bat lozenge.
A bat fisherman's friend.
He's definitely got those in his belt, man.
Fisherman's friend?
Well, he's got to remain quiet, right? Like a ninja.
Yeah, he can't be doing that if he's all raspy and coffee, can he?
Exactly right.
Yeah, this is true. We'll kick it off, you know, the usual rigmarole. Mr. Mercer, what have you been playing this week?
You had to fucking start with me, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Nothing new for me. Actually, no, wait, no, that's a lie. I do have a couple things new this week.
You liar.
Yeah. I'm a horrible liar.
You are.
I only lied about being a thief.
You are transparent.
A little bit further in Binary Domain.
Yay!
And now I can comfortably say, any shooter fan out there who hasn't picked this up to try it yet, you know, bought it or rented it, you are seriously missing out on some goodness here.
I agree.
On the new front, after watching Steve play for about 15 minutes, I went out the very next day and rented myself a copy of Need for Speed, The Run.
Ooh, The Run.
Yeah.
Cars.
And I gotta say, you know, man, I'm really enjoying it.
I had a ton of fun with The Run.
You know, I love the way they managed to put, as simplistic as it is, a little bit of a story into it.
Yep.
And they've weaved in these absolutely amazing little transitions between the cinema scenes and the driving scenes.
The little CTE.
Yeah.
Yeah, or QTE events and stuff.
And I just love, you know, the way how one ends and then the camera sweeps out behind the car and, or, you know, if you're like you playing with hood view, the camera sweeps behind the car and then goes into the car.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a really cool, like, for presentation, it was a great game.
Yeah, and, you know, I gotta say, I'm really, like, I don't know, even know if you could really call it a rebirth of the Need for Speed franchise, but I kind of like what they've been doing the past few years. You know, they've had Shift and Shift 2 for their simulation fans.
Yeah.
They gave Criterion a crack at the game with Hot Pursuit. You know, if you're going to make a balls-to-the-wall crazy arcade racer, then nobody better to do it than Criterion.
Yeah, we all know how that ended.
Yeah.
Very, very well.
Yeah. Hot Pursuit was amazing. And The Run, which I believe is developed by Black Box.
Yeah, it's the guys who have, like, traditionally they have been the Need for Speed studio.
Yeah, and you know what? They knocked this one out of the park.
Frostbite 2.0 powered.
And that's a damn impressive little engine.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems to me like I'm starting to kind of notice a trend with all the Frostbite games.
Yeah.
The engine, like, what the engine really excels at is throwing crap on your screen.
Yeah.
You know, like dust particles and droplets of water and stuff stuck to your screen to just obscure your vision that much.
Yeah.
but it does look really cool.
I love just, you know, when you start that first little race when you're trying to get out of San Francisco, you know, the end scene from Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
And the first time you take that corner and they throw the Grand Theft Auto sun glare in your face.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed with it. I've had it sitting on the shelf forever, and of course I fired it up last weekend and you were watching, so. Well, I mean, I'm glad you decided to give it a try. I think it's down in price now, too. I think it's going for like $29.99 or something now.
I picked it up at the local video store.
Oh, okay,
just,
right on.
Just give it a try. Yeah. I couldn't afford a new game this week.
I hear you.
got a new game coming next week.
Me too.
And on a less impressed note, I also rented to try out Tales of Graces F.
What the heck is that?
That sounds like side-scrolling.
It's an RPG, Kevin.
Oh, okay.
You guys are familiar with the Tales of series.
Yeah, okay.
Vesperia, Phantasia, Destiny, all that stuff.
Yep.
Tales of Graces a couple of years ago was a critically acclaimed Wii exclusive.
Oh.
That never made it over to North America.
Okay.
And it was taken, cleaned up a little bit, given the HD treatment, some new sections added into it to pad out the length, and made its release this week on PlayStation 3.
Oh, cool.
Now, traditionally, I've been a bit of a fan of the Tales series. I own the neat little steelbook collector's edition of Vesperia for 360.
Yeah.
And I have Legendia and The Abyss for the PS2.
Okay.
And I don't know, maybe it's a side effect of all the time I've spent with Skyrim and Amalur lately. Because, traditionally speaking, I do like a good JRPG. I mean, you guys have heard me wax poetically about Rogue Galaxy before. And,
oh, I love Rogue.
You know, pretty much anything level 5 make.
Yep.
And, Grandia 3, I call one of the unsung heroes of the PS2 RPG collection. I mean, that system was great for RPGs.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. And this time there was... It felt a little bare bones.
Okay.
The story takes a long time to get started. You know, the characters, you start off for the first few hours playing as the main characters when they're all younger. And, they're not all that likable. And it just, it's got the anime-style RPG playbook, and it's running through it step by step by step.
I can dig it, yeah.
Yeah, you can predict what's going to happen a good hour before it happens. Only, some games like that, that's kind of fun. I find like there's a few JRPGs I didn't even mind that, but this one here it's almost too modest. It's not near epic enough to get away with it.
Okay.
I mean, we've spoken about Lodoss War before here. You look at something like Lodoss War, and yes, it's cheesy, yes, it's trite, but I mean, it's on such a grand scale that it doesn't matter.
I hear you.
This one here is just, it feels kind of hollow. I mean, it plays well, it plays very well, but it's just, I can't get into it.
It's tough to go back, man. Like, after playing Skyrim and a couple other really good ones, I'm never going to play Chronicles of Noshi again.
I still really have a soft spot for my...
A well-made JRPG.
Yeah, and this one...
Well, I mean, dude, like, I can go back to Final Fantasy XII endlessly.
Yeah.
Endlessly. I will always love that game. I can still, I can still go back to, the aforementioned Grandia 3 or Rogue Galaxy or... Shadow Hearts Covenant, or any of the countless RPGs I own for the PS2.
Yep.
It's just, this one here, it didn't grab me right at the start.
I hear you.
And, yeah, if I'm gonna dedicate 40 to 50 hours to a game, at least give me some characters I can enjoy. I don't have to relate to them, but, just make them less annoying, less squeaky-voiced, less emo.
Right on.
Yeah.
It looks kind of cool to me, looking at some screenshots and stuff. It looks kind of neat, but I think the big thing holding me back is the fact that it's a Tales game, because I was never a huge fan of that series in particular.
Yeah.
You know?
In fact, the characters all look like they're midgets.
Well, that doesn't even really bother me. That's a JRPG thing. It's kind of a style thing, but yeah, the Tales series in general. I mean, I know I played Vesperia for an hour and never took it off the shelf again, you know?
Yeah.
And same with, Tales of Symphonia, I think it was, on GameCube. Same thing, Like, it was okay, but...
Is it the one where the main character looked like he was a member of the RCMP?
Yeah. That's the one. But, yeah, it was...
Holy crap, an RPG starring Jacques Rougeau.
Constable Rougeau.
I'm the Mountie.
But, yeah, it was... It's that series itself, even, I mean, I remember having... the original two that were released for PlayStation. One was a Tales of Destiny, Tales of Destiny 2, I think.
Yep. And, well, there was one for Super Nintendo before that.
Well, yeah, we didn't get that over here, though, did we?
We got it on the Game Boy Advance,
Okay, right on. But yeah, no, I remember owning both games on PlayStation 1, and I kind of wish I still had them because they're both worth mad coin now.
Yeah.
But the series never grabbed me, you know? But
They didn't play Mad Coin.
Yeah, you know, it never was a series. And, I mean, I think originally it was an Enix series or something, too. Or no, that was always Namco, wasn't it?
It was always Namco, yeah.
So, you know, it never really... I don't know, just something about that series. I know it's got its fans.
To me, dude, when you're falling short in scope to Lunar and Wild Arms, you know, there's something wrong.
Yeah, give me Tri-Ace any day of the week. You know, give me Grandia 2, Grandia 3. You know, like, those were...
Any of the Star Ocean games.
Yeah, those were awesome RPGs, you know?
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, that's pretty much it for me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How about you, Mr. Woolridge?
I'm totally out of the loop. I don't play card games or a whole lot of JRPGs. That's okay. I've been having a lot of fun this week. I picked up Dragon Age 2.
Woo!
Nice.
I'm just playing through that.
That's only a year behind.
Yeah, that's not too bad. No?
Did you take out a bottle of ketchup and draw a stripe over your nose?
No.
Step up from your iPad and go do it right now.
Oh, boy, what a fantastic game. It's like, I mean, it's been so long since I played the first one. It's like visiting an old friend, you know?
I gushed a lot about Dragon Age 2 when it first released. And, like, I think back on it, and I don't really... I can't say that I don't have fond memories of it, because I really do. I love the game. But I guess I've cooled a little since I played it. But, I mean...
Right.
But my time spent with the game was fantastic, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm loving it. I mean, Skyrim's got me spoiled when it comes to RPGs now. But there's certain things in the game that it took me a little while to get used to, but now I completely love it, you know? Like the whole fact that you can't buy new armor for your companions. They have to upgrade what they got.
Yeah.
Which makes everything so much easier, you know?
Yeah, it's not as all about micromanaging and stuff.
Yeah, which is really cool. Anything I can't use, I just throw it in my junk and sell it, which is great. It's awesome. So I've been playing a lot of that. I've been playing Dragon's Lair HD on my iPad.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I picked it up. Wow, talk about a flashback.
Oh, man, not necessarily in a good way?
Well, the flashback was just of all the money I spent on that game. It's kind of nice not having to spend that money.
I guess.
But I died probably 40 times in the first 15 minutes of playing.
Wow.
It is still brutally, brutally hard.
I hear that's how they're going to restore the economy. They got Don Bluth working on a new one.
Nice.
Probably.
But it's still cool, man. It's still very cool just having that whole animated kind of interaction, you know? And it kind of got me and my brother thinking about other games that were weird and spent a lot of money on. Do you remember that holographic game, Time Traveler?
I sure do.
Made by the same guys, I think, actually.
Was it really?
Yeah.
I know,
yeah,
Time Traveler was published by Sega.
Right.
And you had this just that little tiny window that you looked into that you could barely see anything. It was such a small viewing area.
Yeah. So, of course, I jumped on YouTube and was looking at stuff, and I was like, oh, man, look at that. But it had that same mechanic that Dragon's Lair and Space Ace had, right?
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
was you had to do your move right away or you were dead.
It was all trial and error.
Yeah. Well,
so weird about
yeah. So next time somebody complains about QTEs in a video game,
that's true, man. Yeah, they're older than you think. I've also been playing Minecraft,
woo,
and not the Pocket Edition,
woo.
Picked up a new graphics card with your help, Mr. Bauer.
Right on.
From my machine, and I spent a couple hours today playing classic Minecraft.
And
for the first time in months.
It's been, like, because you haven't really done the Minecraft questing version and...
You know what? Ever since the official version came out, like, it's been, it was probably the spring was the last time I played Minecraft.
Wow.
Or maybe a little before that. So
here's where we get the big surprise now. And I hate it.
It sucks, man. The graphics, oh my God, they're terrible.
So how is the adventure thing?
I haven't come across any NPC villages yet.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I haven't been with it for very long. I did die a whole bunch of times because I'm just not used to playing this version anymore, you know?
Yeah.
And I've never played the version where you have to eat food every now and again. Right? My first time playing, I decided, okay, I'm just going to go look for a jungle. So I just kept walking really too far from my spawn point. I was like, man, if I die, I'm never going to find my way back here. And eventually found a little cave, went in, did some exploring, and then I realized, oh my god, my food bar is almost empty. I'm going to start to starve to death soon.
I have no food.
Exactly. By the time I got back to the surface, it was nighttime, and I was like, oh crap, there's going to be monsters out there. And then I died from starvation.
That's horrible.
Yeah, with a whole bunch of stuff. So when I respawned, no way was I finding that cave again, because I didn't even have it marked with torches, because I didn't have anything to mark it with. So I just went on another wander and found another little thing, and then a creeper blew me up out of nowhere.
Isn't that what they're supposed to do, though?
That's what they're supposed to do, man. And I swear to God, I don't care if you're talking about necromorphs or zombies from Resident Evil. The scariest video game monster is a creeper, bar none. No reaction. Oh, there we go.
Creeper.
Because they don't make a
sound. I don't know, man. I used to leave the room when you had to get to that level in Mario 3 with the angry sun.
He was pretty creepy looking, I gotta say.
How many T-Wings were wasted in that level?
Oh, yeah, I did. So I started the new game today, and I'm having a lot of fun with it. Oh, man. So much fun.
Well, yeah. I'm glad to see you're back on the Minecraft train.
Yeah. I was having a problem with it, actually. It was crashing on me every about 10 minutes.
Really?
Yep. I was running out of virtual memory.
Weird.
Yeah, so I turned down some of my settings, and now it's running fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a weird thing, but at first I was like, no, not again. aside from those and, you know, Tiny Tower and et cetera, that's pretty much all I've been playing. No Borderlands this week, just Dragon Age 2.
Well, that's pretty good, though.
Yeah.
Dragon Age 2 is well worth.
Man, I'm flying through it, too, playing as a mage. It's awesome.
I never did try the mage in it, but I've heard the mages were kind of overpowered, so that was why I stayed away.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Hmm. Maybe they get that way eventually.
Could be.
Yeah. I've died a couple of times.
I ran into a few roadblocks. To me, that's what it was. It was roadblocks.
Right.
You know, like where I get to a certain point and I just get into a battle that, of course, I also didn't have auto attack.
Right.
And that made the game, that made it so much harder to manage for me, you know? Like,
yeah.
It made it so much harder to kind of keep my abilities going and to keep my character, yeah, my other characters managed and stuff, whereas with the auto attack, everything is just so much freaking easier, man.
Oh, yeah. When did that get patched in?
I'm not sure. And I mean, I know it wasn't there in the beginning. I know for a fact it wasn't, because I remember, like, looking for it. I remember scouring through menus. I even remember posting on the official forums asking, you know, like, are you able to auto-attack in this game? And everybody's like, well, no, it's not that kind of game. You know, it's, they wanted it to be more lively and more action-packed. So I'm actually kind of surprised that it was kept so quiet.
Yeah,
or maybe
yeah,
there was something said about it and I just missed it. Because, you know, I was kind of done with Dragon Age at that point, you know? But I never really saw anything about it being patched in or anything like that, but sure enough, you know, like, I downloaded an update when I fired it up last weekend. You know, I had the Talus, the Felicia Day quest line or whatever. So, you know, when I fired it up and went into my options, I actually went in because I was stuck on a boss. And I went in to lower the difficulty.
Right,
and
right.
And I saw it, and I was like, wait, what? You know? But
awesome.
It was, yeah, I was happy. I was very happy. And I'm really jealous of you because you get to play through it like the original Dragon Age, and that just pisses me off because I had to play through it mashing the X button.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that would suck, actually.
Yeah. I hate you. Anything else? Any other?
That's it for me, man. What have you been playing this week?
Ah, jeez. What have I been playing this week? It's been kind of a hectic week.
Right.
For gaming. I just haven't had a whole lot of gaming time.
Okay.
I did pull a few off the shelf, dust them off. You know, I went back to, I guess this is in anticipation for the game I've got pre-ordered next week, Armored Core 5. I did break out Armored Core 4.
Okay.
And start playing it. And I think the last save file I had from the game was dated 2008.
Wow.
So it had been a while since I played, and I'm not even sure how far into the game I was. Like, I loaded it up, and I was like, I don't recognize any of this. So
right.
I just started a new game and started playing, and I ended up, man, I blinked, and I had burned 3 hours, and it was just like, this game is really fun.
Nice.
And I mean, it's a niche title. It's not for everybody. You know, it's very much in the vein of, you know, giant robot simulation with some action arcade style-ish controls, you know?
I've never played an Armored Core game.
Oh, the mech designs and stuff in it are fantastic.
Yeah.
And that's what it's really all about, is balancing your mech and outfitting it for each mission and stuff like that. And early on, it's kind of... I can't say it's kind of a drag, because it's not. It's still really fun. But you go in, you build up a mech and stuff, and you start a mission, and the mission is done in less than 5 minutes, you know? So,
right.
You know, you're spending 10 or 15 minutes outfitting, you go in, you complete the mission in 5 minutes, you're back to the screen customizing again for the next mission, you know? Which
cool.
was kind of... I can't say it was bad. It wasn't bad at all, but it was just kind of, huh, you know? Like, maybe these missions would be longer if I picked a less capable machine to do it with or something. But, like, all the designs look awesome. The weapons are great. And you really get a cool, like, you know, that trudging around feeling. The graphics are a little bit dated now because, I mean, you're looking at a game that was released in 2007.
Right.
Or I think it might have even been 2006. I think it was a PlayStation 3 launch title. So, you know, it like, I mean, it's an older title, but it still plays really, really well. Like, it's still the best, you know, I call it Japanese-style mech shooter that I've ever played. You know, you ever want to feel like one of these mechs that zips around with booster rockets, like in Gundam or Robotech, you know, this is the best way to do it, you know?
Yeah.
It's a really fun little game.
Better than Metal Wolf Chaos?
Way better than Metal Wolf Chaos, man. Infinitely better. But yeah, no, it's good, and I can't wait for Armored Core 5. What they do is they usually do like a numbered sequel, and then you'll have one or two releases afterwards that are set in like the same universe and prolong the storyline. With Armored Core 5, I'm really excited because it's another reboot, it's a new continuity. But this one is more, it's closer to like the modern timeline. It's not as far out science fiction as what they have been, and it's more conventional warfare and stuff like that. Like it's more, you know, mech suits in World War III kind of thing, you know? So I'm really looking forward to that one. I can't wait to actually pop that one in and give it a try next week. I'm really, really excited.
Cool.
Other than that, Need for which John pretty much echoed my own thoughts on it. It's fast-paced as all hell. The driving mechanics feel really good, but they're not quite, you know, like if you're used to Forza or Gran Turismo like I am, it's not, you know, diehard simulation graphics or simulation mechanics. But it does play really well. It almost reminds me a lot of the Criterion, like Burnout 3, Burnout Revenge, or Need for Speed Hot Pursuit 2. It's got that same kind of feel. Cars are slightly slippery, slightly drifty. But, man, it's a lot of fun. And the storyline, such as it is actually really well handled. You know, like every time they usually try to put a storyline into a racing game, it comes across as really, really cheesy.
You mean like Officer Dick in Need for Speed Most Wanted?
Yeah, you know, keying your car at the opening of the game and all that stuff. But no, this one is, it's still a little cheesy, but it's handled in a much better fashion. Like, you know, you do kind of get invested in the characters, and it does set it up really cool. So I've been enjoying that one.
Nice.
Other than that, I broke out Dark Souls again and
oh, yeah?
proceeded to die repeatedly. I'm on a level called the Catacombs, which is incredibly awesome, but also really difficult. Which
Worse than Blighttown?
No, it's not as bad as Blighttown.
We never speak of Blighttown.
Blighttown shall not be uttered here. But no, it's Dark Souls. Every time I fire it up, it's a game that, you know, when it first came out, I didn't have any distractions, I guess is what it was. You know, it was Dark Souls was kind of my precursor to Skyrim, so I played a shit ton of it. But every time I fired a game in now, I am just amazed at how beautifully hypnotic it is. It is such a stunning game. And I mean, it sucks that the difficulty is such a turnoff to so many people, because if people just sat down and spent some time with it and gave it a chance, you know, it is such a brilliant, old-school, just immersive, you know, I died probably 15 times today, but it wasn't the slightest bit of a detriment to me, you know, like, it didn't slow me down at all, and it was, I just, it's such a hypnotic game, it's such a captivating game. It does mood better than just about anything else I've played, like Skyrim included, you know?
Yeah.
It's just the atmosphere and stuff is incredible. Absolutely incredible.
You should sit down and play with Ebert.
Yeah, really.
Because I read somewhere that he played that a couple weeks ago and it wrecked his shit.
Who, Ebert?
Yeah.
Roger Ebert played Dark Souls?
Played Dark Souls and found it to be a quote-unquote soul-deadening experience.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know Ebert was into the video games.
I think somebody just convinced him to try one.
Oh, okay, very good.
You know, we're not going to win that argument.
No, never, ever. That's cool, I'm fine with it. He's got his stodgy old movie review, and we've got our video games. I'm fine with that.
Hey, well, listen, I'd rather spend my time with Dark Souls than The Seventh Seal.
Or The Descendants.
Or The Descendants,
Sideways. I'm Paul Giamatti, I'm in my 40s, I'm depressed, I'm drinking wine in California. Give me an Oscar. F that shit, man. That's all I got to say.
Did you play anything else?
The only other thing, I did play a little bit more Mass Effect 3.
Yeah?
And, you know, I'm not really making progress like I want to.
Yeah?
It's just not grabbing me, man.
Really?
Yeah, there's something about it. Like, that opening sequence was mind-blowing. The first sequence after that was amazing. And then it just kind of, I don't know, like, I'm to the point now where I don't even really know what's going on anymore.
Right.
You know, like, I'm just kind of, okay. And, I mean, there's been some cool moments and stuff, but I guess it doesn't really have that feeling of finality. Like the urgency was kind of there at the beginning, but now it seems to have kind of slowed down a little bit. And there was a character reveal. The last sequence I played, a new character came into it. And it should have been freaking awesome. Like, it should have been really, really cool. And, I mean, they even kind of presented it in a fashion that it really should have been like, oh, man, that is fantastic. But it just kind of fell flat. It was just kind of like, huh, okay. You know, and I don't know, I can't say that I'm disappointed with it, because I'm not. The game is gorgeous. The mechanics, like, I mean, it's still Mass Effect. It's still that universe. The storyline is really good. But I'm just kind of, I'm waiting for things to escalate, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm waiting for it to kind of grab me by the hair and pull me kicking and screaming into it, you know? Like, I'm just kind of like, okay, right now I'm just kind of, okay, I went to the Citadel, then I went to this other place that was really cool. Garrus came back into it, and it was kind of flat. Like, even when Garrus came back, like, you know, in the second game, you know, you go after this guy, Archangel, and you find out who it's Garrus, and it's like, oh, yeah! Oh, it feels so great, you know? Like, Mass Effect 2 really did a great job of bringing the characters back in.
So he's Archangel in the second Mass Effect that I haven't played yet.
Oh, sorry, Kev. But, like, it does...
Kevin, there's a danger to being streets behind.
But this is the thing, like, there's every character that came into Mass Effect 2, like, the introduction felt really, really cool. And now, like, with this one, my party seems really small. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot to talk, like, a whole lot of people to talk to on the Normandy. Whereas the second one, I mean, I spent hours just interacting with the crew, you know? There doesn't seem to be as much of that. Like, the interactions that I've had have been really cool, but there just doesn't seem to be as much of it. And there's not many new characters. There's only, like, two new characters in the game. You know, like, everything has been, and even worse than that, like, a few of the characters that I have run into, like, a few of the characters from 1 and 2 that I have run into have just been cameos.
Right,
so
right.
Kind of, you know, like at first, like, Ash came back, and it was just, you know, it was just like when Garrus first came back in 2 and stuff, it was really awesome, really exciting, and even Vega, like, I thought Vega was a cool character, and it was really enjoyable, but then after that, everything kind of peters off, I guess. And it doesn't have that same feeling. Like, it should feel like Mass Effect 2 cranked to 11, and right now it kind of feels like Mass Effect 2 cranked down to 8. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm hoping it all comes together. I really am. Like, I mean, right now I'm just going around to all the different alien races trying to recruit them into my summit. And I mean, that's another thing. You know, like, I'm going around talking to all these leaders, like, you must attend to something. And I'm just, it's kind of tedium, you know?
Yeah.
Reapers are attacking the galaxy. We got to stop all these planets from being destroyed, but we're going to gather all the alien races and go have a summit. And then, you know, it just... Some of the plot turns, like, one, it's not real heavy spoiler material, but, you know, you run into the Torians, which is Garrus's crowd, and they're like, okay, we'll join you, but we need help. We need, you know, violence. We need the Krogan. So it's like, okay, if we bring the Krogan into it, they don't give you a choice. It's like, yeah, okay, we're going to recruit the Krogan. And then the blue-skinned Asari or whatever, you know, message you on their fancy hologram phone and say, yeah, that's it, we're out. And it's like, oh, it's just so frustrating. You're like banging your head off a wall. I was like, why would you be out? Your galaxy is being destroyed by this unknown force, and you're going to just, you know, yeah, we don't want to have anything to do with it, sorry. Because you're bringing the Krogan into it. It's like, oh, I just want to ram my head off something. Really hurt.
It sounds like...
Rendezvousing with the fleet for a confab.
Yeah. Steve, it sounds like that you're hooked in, man.
Yeah?
It does. Because if you're reacting that way to an alien race pulling out of the summit,
yeah,
then they've got you hooked.
I guess, but it seems stupid to me. Like, it was just, you know, yeah, logically speaking, it was just dumb. It's just like, okay, y'all made this big old deal about how we all need to band together. Shepard, you know, go and recruit all these other alien races. And it's like, the chick who sent me on the goddamn mission to gather all these alien races is like, yeah, we're out. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Excuse me? Pardon me? Beg your pardon? Come again? You know? Like, oh, it's just so dumb. And it feels like cheap drama, you know?
Yeah.
And that was kind of disappointing. That was like, I just, you know, I'd rather...
I'm playing Mass Effect, not watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I'm not reading the Ultimates.
Yeah. But, you know, like, so far, it's... I mean, it's there. And I will say that the Palavin, I think is the name of the planet, is the sequence where you get Garrus. If the rest of the missions in the game all feel like that, it will definitely frustrate the shit out of me before it's over.
Right.
Because it was way too shooty-shooty for me. It felt like a level in Gears of War.
Oh, okay.
You know, it didn't feel like Mass Effect. It felt like Gears of War.
Right.
And that's not why I play Mass Effect, you know?
Yeah, of course.
But I'm back on the Citadel now, and that, like, I seem to be getting the old school quests and stuff again. So that, I'm cool with that. I'm cool. But if it goes any more shooter than Mass Effect 2 did, it to me, it'll lose the essence of what made it Mass Effect in the first place.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, I mean, so far, you know, like, I still love the game. I'm still really pleased with it. And I can't wait to, like, see where it goes plot-wise. I can't wait to see how they deal with these characters and how they end it all, you know? I have a theory. I haven't read anything. I've been avoiding spoilers deliberately. After especially the first little spoiler I got, I said, okay, I'm not looking at anything else. No guides, no art books, no nothing. So I purposely submerged from any kind of spoiler activity. And I have a theory on how the ending is going to unfold. And if it is what they do, it's going to be both heart-wrenching and at the same time immensely satisfying.
Okay.
So if it does unfold that way, I mean, that's just a theory. It could go in a completely different direction from what I'm thinking, right?
Right.
But so far, you know, I'm going to stick with it, but it hasn't quite hooked me like I expected it to. I mean, I expected to be finished by now.
You know, yeah.
I expected to have sat down all week last week and played Mass Effect 3, but I've only put it in the system twice and played it for 2 or 3 hours at a time, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it got to the point the other night that I was like, yeah, I got to turn this off now. You know, and, I mean, with Mass Effect, even Mass Effect 2, as boring as I found the middle act, I never turned that game off, you know? But I think that's it for me.
Right on.
Shall we get into the news, gentlemen?
Before we get into the news, though, guys.
Okay.
And it's kind of cheating, because this is kind of a news story. Did you guys hear what happened to Geo-Hots?
I did not.
Pardon me for 1 second.
Yep.
While I look this up. Here we go. Okay, was his handle Geo Hot?
I think it was Geo Hots with a Z.
Yeah, because I know his name is George Hots with a Z. Yeah. Who, last time we saw in the news, was being sued by Sony for hacksawing the PS3.
And running to South America or something.
Yeah. Well, has been arrested in Sierra Blanca, Texas.
Ooh.
According to the website Above the Law, Hots was on his way to the South by Southwest Conference in Austin, Texas, when he was stopped at a border patrol checkpoint in the West Texas town.
Down in the West Texas town of El Paso.
The same border patrol checkpoint that has busted Willie Nelson and Snoop Dogg in the past. Just busted Geo Hot for the same thing.
Carrying a bag of weed.
Some of that sweet leaf.
Wow, a 22-year-old hacker smoked marijuana. I'm completely shocked.
Just, Department of Homeland Security officers were searching each car with dogs when they apparently found a quarter ounce of marijuana and an eighth of an ounce of chocolate containing the drug.
That's hilarious.
A quarter ounce. So he was stocked up for the weekend.
Yeah.
He was stocked up for at least a day if he goes by our old rate.
Now, apparently he carries a medical marijuana license in California.
Okay.
Texas, on the other hand...
Don't give a shit.
Don't have medical marijuana.
Rightfully so.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't want to say anything horrible about Texas. I'm sure, you know, there's nice people in Texas. I hear they take their law and order pretty serious.
Like you would.
And carrying that substance is apparently illegal. So, Geo Hotz has found himself charged with a felony and posted the $1,500 U.S. necessary for bail.
It's a felony?
Yeah.
Wow.
I thought it was a misdemeanor. Seriously.
Yeah, possession usually is a misdemeanor.
And I don't know how much how much chronic you'd have to have on you to be considered, you know, for the purpose of distribution.
Yeah, with the purpose of trap. Nah, quarter. I don't know about a quarter ounce. A quarter ounce might actually, because that's a fair chunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. That might actually fall under more than personal use. But I mean, now Texas, I guess, you know, they just really don't like the ganj.
Yeah. Let's see how many other nicknames we can fit in for it. Now, I'm just wondering when, you know, Instructables.com is going to put up a contest for modding the PS3 into a bomb. So we got to ask any of our blasphemers out there if they can build a better hotbox.
The Geo hotbox.
Yeah. I know that's kind of news, but I just thought it was really funny.
Disclaimer, we do not condone or endorse turning your PlayStation 3 into a bong, mainly because resin will really clog up the fans.
Yeah.
And your PS3 will
so
probably
if, yeah,
be yellow
if you're,
light.
If you're the type of person who got to smoke weed every day, Holmes, you know, if you got a one-hitter called Margot Kidder, and you only got to hit that shit once.
Leave your gaming room to do so. Please don't do it while you're gaming, because...
If your whammies are weaponized, step outside.
Yeah, you know, just step outside.
And don't go to Texas.
Be considerate. Your PlayStation 3 doesn't like smoke, okay?
Yeah.
No electronics like smoke. Don't smoke weed at your computer either. It's just not good. It's bad for the little circuits and diodes and gizmos inside those things that make them go.
I just thought it was funny because, you know, Hotz came across as a bit of a doucher.
He's a bit of a dick, yeah.
But what 22-year-old isn't?
I wasn't a dick when I was 22.
I'll bet you were a massive cock when you were 22.
Kev, was I a dick when I was 22?
Speak honestly, Kevin.
I don't think so. We were all nerds.
Yeah.
There
you go. I wasn't a dick. I was probably about 22 when John first met me, so maybe he'd think I was a dick.
Maybe.
Jesus, when was this?
You've already used your free report card rental. No, I haven't. Yes, you have. But the customer is always right, except in this case when you're wrong.
Dude, that was like 1998.
Yeah, I would have been about 20.
I was 16.
I would have been about 22.
Gonna hold that against me.
Well, no, but I could see you thinking I was a dick when I was 22. That was more of a knock on me than you, man. Come on now.
Slap the beard off your face. Now I'm angry. Let's move on to the news.
News. Now we do the news. Release date news. The biggest release date news of the week, of course. The huge release date news that involves a certain RPG. Risen 2 Dark Waters has been bumped out to May 22nd, 2012.
That's not the big release news.
Dick! That's a dick move.
It's still coming in April for PC, but console...
We're going to start calling you Steve O'Hots.
We have to wait until May 22nd, 2012. It's okay, because I already had my game for April picked out, so I'm glad that they waited till May.
It's unfortunately they decided to release it 1 week after the next bit of release.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's 7 days after Diablo 3! Diablo 3 hits the PC on May 15th.
Crazy.
Hello, my friend. Stay a while.
If you think any other PC game is going to sell anything for the next 6 months to a year...
Well, Risen 2 will have been out for about a month on PC at this point.
Yeah?
So that's not so bad, because it comes out April 17th, I think, on PC.
Okay.
But the PS3 360 version was delayed to May 22nd.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in the Diablo 3 announcement, there was no hint whatsoever of a console version. However, you know, the usual scuttlebutt in the skunkworks says that we'll see a console version before Christmas.
I got my doubts on that, man.
I don't know. They've been working. They've got a console team.
So, oh, do they?
Yeah, that's been confirmed.
Yeah, but didn't we talk last week about how absolutely craptastic the last console Diablo was?
We did. But I think
that was 2 weeks ago.
Diablo 3 was kind of developed with consoles in mind, apparently. Well, I guess wait and see. You never know. It would make sense.
It would make sense.
It would. And, I mean, if they could get Torchlight to work on Xbox Live, which they did, you know. The only other bit of release news is Telltale Games' Walking Dead game was officially shown earlier this week, and it hits your favorite source of digital downloading this April.
What kind of game?
I think it's like an action-adventure. Like, it's got that... Well, I mean, Telltale, their big thing is adventure games, but I think it's more in the same vein as Jurassic Park than Sam & Max or Back to the Future.
Okay.
So there is like an action element to it.
Do you know if it's based on the comic or the TV show?
I think it's more based on the comic, but I think they use, like, the character designs. It's done in a hand-drawn style, like an artwork style, but I think the characters look more like they do in the TV show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. From what I understand.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
Hmm.
I have been, on occasion.
In other news, GameSpot, you all know GameSpot.
Oh, yes.
Has purchased GiantBomb.com. Jeff Gertzman just might be the devil, or a very, very wealthy sub-demon, or hell lord.
That's insane.
So what was that, 2007? He got shit-canned after the...
the Kane and Lynch kerfuffle?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was... Man, like... That
no,
is
and
wild.
I gotta admit, both sides were kind of being equally... douche-alicious in that regard.
Yeah, well, I mean, his review was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was.
But, I mean, you know, all fine and dandy.
But, I mean, that site had Greg Kasavin on it for years, and he was a sanctimonious tool in reviewing anything that wasn't a PC RTS game.
This is true.
What is GiantBomb.com? I don't know it.
Okay, you heard about Gertzman Gate, didn't you?
Nope.
Okay, the big thing was 2007... Jeff Gertzman reviewed Kane and Lynch for GameSpot.
Right.
Eidos at the time had the page littered with advertising for Kane and Lynch, like the banner ads, the side banners, everything was Kane and Lynch ads, right?
I do remember this, and he shit-canned it, didn't he?
He gave it like a 6.0 and called it like an ugly... He was nasty. He was really nasty, right?
Well, when you look at it, 6.0 isn't terrible. It's just mediocre.
For a fall AAA title, it's pretty terrible.
Yeah.
You know, it and like what a site, it's like we talked about, I think we talked about it last week, when you get into GameSpot or IGN, I don't know, myself and Jeff had a discussion last night, we had a great discussion actually, about review sites and stuff, and when you get into a site like GameSpot or IGN, I don't think these guys, these douchebags, really realize what it is they're doing to these games.
Well, they hold a certain level of power.
They do, and it really, like, I mean, you know, in all honesty, and there's no denying this. I mean, yeah, like we've got our outlets. Like, I mean, I always go by Game Trailers and Eurogamer. They're my gauge, because
yeah.
I find more often than not they're on the same page as me. Most readers, most people looking online for a game review will go to either GameSpot or IGN. I'd
right.
say the ratio is probably well into the high 80s or even 90%. You know, like. If IGN comes out and trashes a game, people hesitate. and that's all there is to it. Like, I look at, I can't remember what game it was myself and Jeff were talking about. Oh, Silent Hill Downpour. IGN gave Silent Hill Downpour a 4.5.
Oh, yeah, I read that this week.
A 4.5. Other sites, I think it was GameSpot, gave it an 8. Eurogamer gave it like a 7. You know, like it's been getting decent review scores, but IGN...
If Eurogamer is giving a game a 7, if you're at all interested in that genre, it's worth a look.
Exactly. Because
they're a little bit on the tough side.
They're
right?
brutal.
Actually, no, I wouldn't say tough. I'd say Eurogamer are a little more... Yeah, on the realistic side.
Yeah, they're fair.
They kind of embrace the idea that, you know...
It is a 10-point scale.
Yeah, scoring less than an 8 does not make it terrible.
Yeah, they embrace the 10-point scale, the full 10-point scale, you know? Yeah. But, like, my whole thing with it, what blows my mind is people started to doubt. You know, like, people are like, oh, maybe I shouldn't buy Downpour because IGN gave it a 4.5. You know, it's so bad of a score. And like, even because, even in spite of the fact that, you know, GameSpot or, I don't know, there was one other site gave it, I think, an 8 or an 8.2. And in spite of the fact that one of these sites gave this game an 8 or an 8.2, they were still hesitant because IGN gave it a 4.5.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, man, like, listen to yourself. You sound like a goddamn idiot.
Yeah.
You know, like, just, you're a Silent Hill fan? Yes? Yes. Go buy the fucking game.
Yeah, buy it, make up your own mind.
Yes. Or go rent it, for God's sake. You know, do something, but don't sit there and piss and whine and moan because IGN gave it a 4.5. Play it for yourself. Make up your own damn mind.
Yeah.
You know, don't be a sheep. And especially to IGN, the guys who publish, what, 500-word reviews and don't understand what the meaning of the word not an average when you look at the review scores on the bottom. You know, like, and this is the other big bone of contention that I had with them in terms of reviews. Like, Silent Hill Downpour is a decent-looking game. You know, like, it looks better than Alan Wake did, you know? But you go down to the section where they break everything down, and every score is in the fours. Which is bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, which is total bullshit.
I haven't read the review. Did they apply any solid argument to why those scores were there?
No, just it was a heartbreaking, not Silent Hill, blah, blah, blah. You know, it was horrible. It was a horribly, poorly written review. Just like their I Am Alive review. You know, like, they talk about how innovative the game is, and then they talk about how halfway through you get bored of it, and then they give it a 4.5. And it's just like, you guys are insane. You're the most schizophrenic review site I've ever seen in my life. If it's not a big AAA, you know, console cornerstone, then it gets dumped, you know? I mean, what would I expect from the same site that gave the original Assassin's Creed, like, what was it, a 6.5 or something?
Insane.
You know, like, but I just, and it's not even about sour grapes for giving a game a low review score. It's all about the tone. It's all about the way your review is written. And it feels to me like every now and again, they love to just pick out a game and go down hard on it. You know,
I find them, it's the same problem that, you know, way back in the day when game magazines were still around,
yeah,
were still fairly popular. You remember how bad EGM got for it?
Yeah.
For a little while there, you know, the guys got really, really pretentious, really... And not I mean so much pretentious in an artsy sense, but just, you know, they thought being cynical made them sound cool.
Yeah, and I mean it's rampant now in the industry anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to the point. Jeff Gertzman, he trashed the shit out of Kane and Lynch, which arguably may have deserved it or may not. In my opinion, it didn't. Kane and Lynch, to me, was a solid 7.5 or an 8 game. I loved the shit out of it. I also love the sequel.
Yeah.
You know, take that for what it's worth. So he trashed it. He was fired from GameSpot, like, unceremoniously shit-canned from GameSpot. Fans cried absolute murder over it. Rightfully so. You know, like, so much for not being biased. You know?
Yeah.
And then he turned around and started up Giant Bomb, kind of in defiance of the corporate structure of GameSpot. And Giant Bomb has been a pretty entertaining site. It has been pretty...
I love their the thing they do, Quick Look.
Yeah.
When a big game is coming out, they'll sit down and they'll play it for like 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
And just record two of the guys shooting the shit over
it. Yeah, I think that's really cool. And they also...
They're really into the user-generated content.
Yeah, and they love, like they are really honest, you know, like they really kind of you can get a gauge for their tastes based on their reviews. Like, I mean, it's the only site online that gave Syndicate a perfect score. They gave Syndicate a 5 out of 5.
Yeah.
You know, and when you read through it, Gertzman is absolutely enamored with the game, and it shows in his review. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of sorry to see them get folded back into GameSpot, which it's kind of funny more than anything, I guess.
Now, GameSpot have said that they are going to remain an independent brand.
Oh, okay.
But
they're just paying Gertzman's salary again.
Yeah.
I know I had read a while ago, I think probably about 6 or 8 months ago, that they were in a spot of financial trouble, as it was. Because it never really took off like he expected it to. But, yeah, I mean, it's cool.
Hmm.
I guess.
Yeah. I guess we'll move on.
Yep.
This week in Minecraft, Pocket Edition has seen another update. They're calling it more of a tweak update than a feature update, but it has added pigs, new mechanic for flying in creative mode, and a completely new control scheme.
Really?
Which is yeah. Instead of having your entire screen, your tablet or your phone or whatever, as the camera, you know, let you move just with your finger.
Yep.
They've put a crosshair on it now, and you control it just like you control any other kind of first-person-y thing. You know, down in the corner, the right-hand corner, you've got your D-pad, you know, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Moving around and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, jumping the other way. So it actually works really well.
Cool.
I like it a lot. I'm probably never going to play Pocket Edition again because...
Well, because you, yeah.
I've got the full version now. The next update is supposed to incorporate something called Mantis, the Minecraft Advanced Touch Technology Interface System.
Okay.
I have no idea what that is. I have no idea. It must have something to do with inventory management, maybe. I don't know. I can't even guess, man. But that's kind of exciting, actually. I'm looking forward to seeing what that's going to be.
Interesting.
Yeah, and since this update was just a tweak and not really a feature update, I expect the next one will probably come pretty soon.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's my guess anyway.
In other PC-centric, well, no, yours was not really PC-centric, I guess, but hey. Baldur's Gate Enhanced Edition has been announced.
That's exciting, man.
Blast from the past, an all-new remake of the BioWare classic will hit PCs this summer. Baldur's Gate 2 will follow.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Includes
which one had Minsk?
Minsk was in both.
Okay, good.
Yeah. It'll include new content, new creative content generated by this new development company. I can't remember the name now. I lost it. Oh, well.
Okay.
Some of the original developers are involved. Some of the guys who created the original Baldur's Gate are involved. And there's more news forthcoming. Of course, there haven't been any official screenshots or anything yet. But they say, you know, high-def graphics, and it's using the BioWare Infinity engine still, which is kind of bizarre, I guess.
But, and Boo.
Oh, Minsk and Boo will be back, for sure.
Nice.
But I'm excited. It's kind of funny, actually, because it was only earlier today I actually booted up the original Baldur's Gate.
Really?
Yeah, and then I went online looking for news, and I saw this, and I was like, what?
So much fun, everyone.
Baldur's Gate is the first game I remember not being able to run on my machine.
Really?
Like, it's my first memory of having to go through that experience of trying to get a game running and it not working.
Yeah, that was... That's not something I miss.
Because I remember playing it down at your place, and then I borrowed it, probably a pirated copy, even back then. And
I bought it brand new today. It came out, man.
That's right, yeah. And I remember
bringing it
home. I
had it pre-ordered at Microplay.
And I was like, oh, man, it's not going to run.
I think it was one of the first RPGs that I really spent hundreds of hours with, you know?
Right.
It was one of those first games that really, like, I mean, the Super Nintendo, Final Fantasy, Final Fantasy II, all that stuff, you know? You know, I spent a fair bit of time with them, but it was always kind of, you know, 30, 40 hours, go through the campaign, turn it off, never touch it again, you know? I think Chrono Trigger was the first one I played through more than once. And then it wasn't until Baldur's Gate, really. And Baldur's Gate kind of came out at that time where I was really starting to get back into games a lot again.
Yeah.
And I'd had my few years where I just, now I played Diablo because everybody played Diablo. But Baldur's Gate kind of came along when I was really starting to kind of, you know, around the same time as Fallout and stuff like that. I think Baldur's Gate was 99 or 98. It came out shortly after the original Fallout, I know.
Hmm.
And it was when I was really kind of diving back into RPGs and stuff again, and I remember just being completely enamored with Baldur's Gate. I remember playing the ever-loving crap out of that game. I think I had a save file with, like, over 300 hours, you know?
Crazy.
But I've never finished it.
You never finished
I've never finished the original Baldur's Gate.
Wow.
I actually got to the city of Baldur's Gate, which was immense. And it's one of those games, man, where you, like, you have to really kind of explore every nook and cranny, and it's just so time-consuming.
Yeah.
You know, it's so ridiculously time-consuming. So exhaustive, I guess, is the word. And I guess now where I'm so used to stuff like Skyrim, Kingdoms of Amalur, and all of that, I can't sit down and just click all over a map to uncover locations and speak to everybody and stuff anymore, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm definitely looking forward to see what they do with it.
I'm really excited about it,
yeah,
man. That's going to be great.
You want to know what I'm excited
about? What's
that? I probably shouldn't be so excited about this, but I really am. Microsoft has confirmed for E3 this year, there will be no new Xbox show.
Woo! I think we had a news story similar to this a few weeks back. But that's
for the PS4.
I think we had for 360 as well. But just the fact that they reiterate and they have confirmed again that they're not doing it, I think that's worthy. You know, I'm glad.
Yeah. They even said there's going to be no talk about it either.
Good. Show games.
Yeah.
Let us see games.
Well, I mean, did you guys hear what? Oh God, what's his name? The guy who created the Unreal Engine, Tim Sweeney.
Yeah, Tim Sweeney. Yeah.
Yeah, Tim Sweeney has said that. He estimates that the current consoles could have another 6 to 8 years of life in them.
Well, it's amazing because we're to the point now. I mean, the Xbox 360 launched in 2005.
Yeah.
You know, we're actually to that point where there should have been another generation, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, we should be on the cusp of a new system this year or a year and a half ago, you know?
Guys, we are on the cusp of a new system.
Shut up.
The Wii U.
Shut up. Rub sand in your dead little eyes.
Better make it coarse.
By the way, I need you to go to the store.
And buy sand.
Buy sand. I don't know if they grade it.
Coarse. But yeah, I'm happy about that.
Yeah. Well, it's just, you know, I really don't think... With the way games are still coming out nowadays, and we're still being wowed by them.
Yeah, the hardware, it's not even so much just the hardware. I think it's kind of the same thing that hit the PC market like a few years ago. We've gotten to the point where the hardware has kind of outpaced what people are capable of. So,
yeah.
You know, until we catch up, there's no real need to boost the technology. And I mean, PCs haven't really, nothing's really changed on PC for, 4 or 5 years now? You know? Cards have gotten faster, more powerful, but, you don't need them. It's not a requirement.
So if Crytek are listening, slow the fuck down.
Slow down there, Sonny Jim.
Yeah. But yeah, man, I mean, look at the games we've had in the past few years. You know, we've got games out there that have brought to life, you know, the comic book art of, a McFarlane or a Monrera.
Yeah.
Right, you got stuff like Uncharted, which if... If what I saw this week in Adventures of Tintin is any indication, you know, we can make games that look as good as movies now.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Tintin was no slouch in terms of visuals.
Oh God, no, it wasn't at all. But I was looking at it and thinking, this technology looks pretty close to what they're pulling off in Uncharted.
Yep, I agree.
We've been talking a lot of PC this podcast.
Wacky, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got a bit more PC news.
Okay.
Wasteland 2 Kickstarter. Closing in on the $1 million mark in just under 2 days.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's got another, month to go.
Wow.
That's a name I have not heard in a long time.
So the original Wasteland RPG, created by Interplay alumni in the late 80s, and was the original inspiration behind Fallout.
I think it was an EA title originally, and when Tim Kaine and Fergus Urquhart tried to start Fallout, they originally envisioned it as a rebirth of Wasteland, but of course they didn't own the rights.
Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, man, this is something else when it comes to Kickstarter. Like, I'm pretty shocked.
Again, it proves what we were saying before. You know, you need a name behind you, though.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, Wasteland 2, it doesn't get much more fan service-y than that, right?
Yeah.
Especially now when you compare that, you know, that fellow who's trying to recreate the type of tactical shooters that were around in the PC and PS1 era.
Yeah.
Right, and I don't think he's having the same measure of success.
No, because nobody wants to play Hidden and Dangerous 4.
No, like, I don't think you're going to see photographs of this guy rolling up a $100 bill as a joint.
No.
Which is, that was a ray of sunshine to me. I'm sure it was the Geohots.
Speaking of...
George, Tim stayed in San Francisco to do that.
Speaking of Fallout... sort of, I guess. Obsidian Entertainment has been hit with layoffs after Microsoft pulls the plug on an unannounced next-gen project they were working on. Obsidian, for those who don't know, Obsidian Entertainment was actually formed by two of the guys who were behind Interplay in the Golden Age, Black Isle Studios in particular, Fergus Urquhart and Tim Kaine. Their output, their modern output, they've been around a while now. They've been around, I think, close to 10 years. But, I mean, you've had Neverwinter Nights 2, Knights of the Old Republic 2, Alpha Protocol. I mean, there's been a lot of compromised product there. But there's always been that promise as well. You know, there's always been that, like, they do things just a little bit differently. They kind of march to the beat of their own drum. And, like, in spite of the general lack of polish on a lot of their finished product, it's always had a certain charm. You know, it's always had this certain appeal. And I really like their work. I really enjoy it. Like, I own every Obsidian game that's been released. And this makes me kind of sad. Publicly, they're saying the numbers estimate about 30 or so staff, some of which were hired as recently as, like, 24 hours before the layoffs, which is kind of sad. But some insiders say that the situation is considerably more dire and that Codename North Carolina, this next-gen project they were working on for Microsoft, was desperately needed to ensure the company's future. And supposedly CEO Fergus Urquhart actually choked up while addressing the staff.
Wow.
Which was, man, it really breaks my heart. And I mean, some developers, you know, like Bizarre Creations and these guys, they were big, they were AAA developers and... You know, made PGR and all this stuff, and Activision bought them out. They did Bloodstone, this James Bond game, and then were shut down by Activision. I mean, you kind of saw that coming, and you kind of, like, they couldn't really do much to fight it. And, I mean, it's sad to see any developer close. I hate to see a development studio shut down. But Obsidian, goddammit, man, they deserve a chance.
Yeah.
You know, they really deserve it. And to add insult to injury, it came out today as well that... they had basically the development deal they had signed with Bethesda. They were paid straight for Fallout New Vegas. And it was kind of a thing where, you know, Bethesda handed it off to Obsidian as kind of a wink and a nudge to Fergus and his team, like three of the guys who worked on the original Fallout. And they basically signed a deal where they got paid straight pay for it, plus they would receive a bonus if Fallout New Vegas had received an 85 or better Metacritic average. It missed out by 1 point.
That's ridiculous.
That is bullshit. And I'm ashamed of people. I'm ashamed. You know, like, it's just like, man. For one thing, Metacritic is not really a gauge for paying somebody. You know, I would think sales of the game would be a much better gauge than, you know, have royalties instead of a Metacritic score. You know? Because Fallout New Vegas did really well. Did really, really well. But they didn't get any... royalties from it, which is horrible, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's not a knock on Bethesda. It's you know, Bethesda were basically throwing Obsidian a bone, and, you know, more power to them. But, I just, man, it breaks my heart to miss out on that by 1 point, you know? And this is a bunch of guys, they're a talented bunch of developers, their ambition is limited only by their finances, and they keep getting screwed. You know, like, they got screwed by LucasArts with Knights of the Old Republic 2. They weren't given... I mean, partially it was their own fault. Yes, partially it was poor planning. They said they could deliver the game in a year, and they couldn't. So the game got released unfinished. Fine, you know. And then as recently as Alpha Protocol, you know, they were neck down in development, and Sega comes along and basically says, yeah, we want a finished product now, and we want to put it out. And they're like, well, the game is finished, but it needs all kinds of quality testing. And Sega's like, nope, it's got to be released right now. You know, so they release a game full of glitches and bugs and what have you because they weren't even allowed to test it. And then when they wanted to patch it, Sega basically said no. You know, yeah. Like that kind of stuff is just – I hate to see that. I hate to see it, you know. Yeah. And then they had Dungeon Siege 3 for Square Enix, which was actually a really well-made, you know. It was a fully realized first – one of the first games they put out that was really, you know, a classy product. And it arrived DOA. Nobody bought it. Nobody cared. You know, so
they're gonna have to start a Kickstarter, man.
They're gonna, yeah, there you go, Kickstarter, Alpha Protocol 2.
Yep. Get on that, Fergus.
No, I'm hoping they can pull it around. I'm hoping like they can get out there with another nice RPG, and you know, yeah. I know they do have a South Park RPG in the works right now that people are talking about, but I don't think that's gonna be enough.
It's
yeah.
South Park.
Yeah.
Step away from the licensed products, boys.
Really?
And go to EA. They love spending money. I mean, Jesus, they gave us Brutal Legend.
Apparently, there was rumors going around for a while that BioWare was trying to buy them. But I don't know what happened. Whatever happened to that, you know?
Also this week, Sega unannounces that they are working on HD remakes of Shenmue and Skies of Arcadia for PSN and Xbox Live. No release window. Yet.
I'm looking for some sailors. Do you know someone who speaks the language of Chinese? Want to play Lucky Hit?
Do I ever want to play Lucky Hit?
Want to play Lucky Hit?
Like, okay, so they've announced Jet Set Radio.
Huzzah.
And they've, somewhat announced Shenmue. They're neither confirming nor denying. And well, Sega needs to talk to somebody at Activision about how to do this viral leak business.
Yeah, they basically announced them on Twitter, but didn't confirm them. Like they said, yeah, we're working on Shenmue and Skies of Arcadia. Anyway, see ya. You know, like,
yeah.
What?
Well, I'm just wondering. I'm gonna get us some hate mail now. Yeah. What else is on the Dreamcast?
Wow.
I mean, we already had a remake of Code Veronica.
We did.
Right?
Yeah, several. What do I own for Dreamcast?
Starlight. You know, Marvel Capcom 2 was already on PSN and Xbox Live.
Yeah, hooray.
You know, Mark of the Wolf is out.
Yeah. It was a real fighter system, which is ironic because the control pad was absolutely terrible for fighters.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else, really.
You're telling me gamers are going to be clamoring for Power Stone?
Oh, that's out for PSP anyway.
Yeah.
Power Stone was more a curiosity, I think, than anything.
Or was it ever? That was what I meant.
Oh, okay, yeah. Gotcha.
I'm not, I don't have any real fond memories of Power Stone.
I think probably my favorite game on the Dreamcast was the original Soul Reaver.
I have nothing to say about any of that, so I'm just going to move on.
Okay, fair enough.
Mass Effect fans, I got nothing to say about this either. Mass Effect fans are pissed off at BioWare over the ending to Mass Effect 3. And we were talking about this earlier, right, Steve, about how you were feeling with Mass Effect, hoping the ending would, you know,
yeah.
Help you. BioWare has posted the following statement. I'm going to do my best BioWare voice
okay.
Now.
Remember, they're from Calgary.
What? Oh, they're from Calgary.
Yeah, or Edmonton. Remember that.
I'm just going to talk my normal voice.
Okay.
We appreciate everyone's feedback about Mass Effect 3 and want you to know that we are listening. Please note, we want to give people time to experience the game. So while we can't get into specifics right now, we'll be able to address some of your questions once more people have had time to complete the game. What does that even mean?
To me, it means they're going to be doing some DLC with a new ending.
You think so? Yeah.
That's what it tells me. And the other thing it tells me is people are whiny bitches and they need to grow up.
Yeah.
You know, unless the ending is, you know...
Congratulations, a winner is
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you know, something stupid like Ashley...
Halo 2.
Ashley giving Commander Shepard a Cleveland Steamer or something, you know? Like, I just... Oh, man, like, people piss me off so much.
But I'm in a romance with Rex.
I just
the horror,
man. I'm sure that it can't be that bad. I'm sure what it is, and I mean I did read some stuff about how what they were complaining about was that in the end game the choices that you made in the first two games didn't really matter. They were of no consequence to the end game of Mass Effect 3.
I see.
And I'm kind of like, guys, what did you expect? This is the end of the series.
Yeah,
you know, like, really, when you think about it, how could they have possibly crafted an epic ending worthy of this trilogy if they were factoring every freaking decision that you made from now to the end? You know, it kind of makes sense. And, I mean, yes, Mass Effect 2 people kind of overemphasize that you could make more choices at the ending of Mass Effect 2 and it changed this and changed that. But the ending of Mass Effect 2 was actually really transparent as well. Like, I mean, the only difference was who was left alive in the closing cutscene. You know, I think they're making a bigger deal out of it than is really necessary. I think people are kind of... They're forgetting what went on in Mass Effect 2 conveniently enough, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's the journey, not the destination.
Yeah, and the other side of it is if it's an end, I'll be happy. If it's an ending to the series, if they end Commander Shepard's story in a satisfying fashion, then I'm satisfied, you know? If it's an ending, if they put a period on Commander Shepard's journey through three games, that'll be enough for me.
Yeah.
You know? I don't need multiple endings to the game.
Where are you going, Chief?
Yeah, I don't need multiple endings based on choices I made 5 years ago when I was playing Mass Effect. You know, like, it's great that the choices are there, it's great that they have an effect on the gameplay of Mass Effect 3, but I don't really think that the final act needs to be what they want it to be, you know? And maybe now this is what this DLC is going to address, I don't know, but... I gotta hand it to BioWare. There were enough people pissed off about it, especially on their official forums. Like, their fan base is what they're looking at. And, I mean, this is a vocal minority. Let's face it. I mean, this is the internet we're talking about. This is an extremely loud vocal minority who are bitching and moaning about this. But they are willing to address it because it's their fans, because it's the people who post on the official forums and that sort of stuff. These guys are... They're bread and butter. BioWare recognizes that, and they are willing to do something to please them. And I gotta give them credit for that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I definitely got to take my hat off to him there. So I guess that's it for news, is it?
That's the news.
Did anyone have a topic to throw at us this week?
Well, I guess, I mean, if you guys don't have anything, this harkens back to something I was talking about earlier.
Okay.
Scariest video game monster, go.
Oh.
And it doesn't mean, I don't mean scary necessarily by how it looks.
Just
how it made you feel playing. Yeah.
Oh, man. There are so many.
Well, then.
It's an ambush.
Definitely.
The soulless abomination who decided to put pillars in the last boss fight of Dracula X.
I don't think that quite counts.
No.
Man, that's a good one.
Well, you guys already have my answer.
The creepers in Minecraft?
Definitely.
They
make no sound, Steve, and then they blow up. There's nothing more scary than that.
That is.
They spawn in the dark. The dark.
The dank, man. The dank.
And if you're in the dark, you want to be mining, which means your back is turned to everything.
You're looking at the ground with a pickaxe.
Exactly. Turning around every 5 seconds to make sure nothing's there. I'm
trying to think what really... There have been a few. I know I can definitely think that kind of creeped me out and stuff.
Right.
There were a few in Dark Souls that really kind of, you know, unnerved me. And when you see him, you're kind of like, ah! Oh! You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because you know you're in trouble. Actually, yeah, definitely. Demon Souls.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it was level 3-1, the Asylum. And you had these crazy Cthulhu-headed bastards with these green lanterns.
Right.
And when they spotted you, they shot like an electrical charge at you that froze you. And then they ran in and basically impaled you with a beam of light. And it used to take away like 3/4 of your health. They were creepy as hell.
Wow.
And then to top that all off, like it's a really dark level. And at one point in the level, there's 3 or 4 of these guys around. And you hear this woman singing faintly in the distance. And it was just really damn eerie.
Crazy.
What makes that even creepier, man, is the way they do the Donald Sutherland at the end of Body Snatchers.
Yeah. When they spot you, they let out an eerie howl.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely those. Definitely those Cthulhu-headed mind flayer bastards from Demon's Souls.
Right. Right.
This isn't so much scary in the traditional sense. I cannot, for the life of me, remember the name of the boss. It was one of the boss fights from Zone of the Enders 2, second runner. And it was the guy who shuts down the lights.
Yeah, and you get your computer telling you, like, hard left, hard right.
Accelerate.
Yeah.
Decelerate. Block.
Yeah.
Dodge left. Dodge right. Incoming projectile. And then everything goes silent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're searching around for... I remember the music was really creepy at this point.
Yeah. That was a good one. And, of course, originally my thoughts were just going to, you know, Resident Evil or Silent Hill or something, but...
Right.
Mr. X punching through a wall.
Yeah. There was some good stuff in Dead Space, too, man.
Dead Space had some scary stuff. The very first time I ever saw a giant spider coming down from the ceiling in Skyrim.
Yeah, that was was pretty good, too.
Hole,
yep.
You know?
Yep.
That was freaking scary.
That was pretty good, too, yep.
Yeah.
In the second Dead Space, the very first time you see the... I forget what they're even called. Just the classic necromorph, the ones everyone knows. They got the giant scythe for arms,
yeah.
And yeah. The very first time one of those appears in the game, and the second one was still Visceral Studios, wasn't
yep.
it? Yeah. Well, they basically, you know, they give you about 5-10 seconds to check
to
see.
Is this spoiler territory?
No. They basically just give you 5 or 10 seconds to realize if you're wearing clean underwear.
Yep.
And then they make you shit yourself in screaming, bleeding terror. And it's just, it's not even just jump scare, it's just intense. Just balls to the wall. And that kind of sets the tone and answered the question of whether or not they'd be able to do scary and action-packed at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, some of those boss fights, man, in the first Dead Space were like...
The first time you fight, I think he's called the Brute, the guy that's all armored on the front.
Yeah, white-knuckle intensity.
Or when you're out on the one of the awesome set pieces, you're basically standing on a small planetoid. This big spherical rock. Walk around as you see it on the ship, how it does the planet cracking. It's basically mining this thing for elements, and as you're walking around trying to... set explosive somewhere, then all of a sudden you get these, they're just a smaller Dead Space enemy, but just, you're in zero gravity, so you can't hear them. And then they just come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was definitely a good one.
My opinion, though, those are scarier than Resident Evil.
Oh, definitely, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But I don't think they're as scary as the Doctor in Zone of the Enders.
Or even, I gotta say, Silent Hill 2. Silent Hill 2 was creepy as shit.
Pyramid Head?
Pyramid Head was pretty nasty.
Yeah.
He was always frightening. He was considerably more frightening, even than, like, Mr. X or the Nemesis in Resident Evil. You know, he was a damn freakish bastard.
Well, it's because, you know, you didn't have to have him suddenly punch through a wall. All you had to hear was the giant meat cleaver dragging on the floor.
And then that rusty saw blade music that they used to use, you know?
Funny story, I used to get creeped by the violin at the start of the Silent Hill theme
in
the first game.
Yeah.
You know, that used to send a shiver up my spine. Funny story, my older cousin used to actually get he got creeped out a little bit at the beginning of the first Metal Gear Solid when the Police Knots theme came up. Yeah. He found that a little bit creepy. I think he's a pussy, but...
Now, the Psycho Mantis fight was pretty creepy.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. Anything else, gentlemen? Any other creepy...
No, that's it for me, really.
I don't think I've got anything else.
Yeah. Oh, you guys know you were afraid of the Grim Reaper in Castlevania.
Oh, that was a good one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it just gave me maple popcorn, I think. Mm-hmm. No?
Nice.
Honey mustard popcorn.
That's disgusting.
It's actually kind of good.
Ugh. Mustard and popcorn does not go together for
honey mustard.
Yeah, honey mustard and popcorn does not go together for me.
And on that note, thank you for listening. Thank you, boys, for
joining. Why don't you pop onto the Facebook page, tell us about some of your scarier video game encounters.
We got a Facebook group that, we are posting it on a regular basis. You can follow us on Twitter at BProcessing. You can go to DVDverdict.com. You can hit up the forums. We've got our own little blast processing section right there. And hell, you can go on iTunes, subscribe to DVD Verdict Presents, and you'll get us along with four or five other really awesome shows, including the soon-to-be-launching They Came From the North, which also features myself and Mr. Mercer. But unfortunately not Kev. I'm sorry.
That's all right, man.
Kevin Woolridge fans, we will find a way to appease you.
Kevin didn't fulfill our French-Canadian...
our French-Canadian demographic.
Yeah.
So, if there's anything we want you to take away from this podcast, it is this.
Where were the other drugs going?
We are out of here.